when you hear a show tune from the Great White Way, does a shiver run through ya? Well, we're giving them to ya. Sing hallelujah and shout hooray. Come on along and listen to Broadway to Main Street.
Just sit and putter. Life's candy and the sun's a ball of butter. Don't bring around a cloud to rain on my parade. Don't tell me not to fly. I simply got to. If someone takes a spill, it's me and not you. Who told you you're allowed to rain on my parade? At least I didn't fake it, hat, sir. I guess I didn't make it, but whether I'm the rose of sheer perfection, a freckle on the nose of life's complexion, the cinder or the shiny apple of its eye. I gotta fly once, I gotta try once, only can die once, right, sir. Ooh, life is juicy, juicy, and you see I'm gonna have my bite. Get ready for me, love, 'cause I'm a comer. I simply gotta march, my heart's a drummer. Don't bring around a cloud of rain on my parade. I'm gonna live and live now. Get what I want, I know how. One roll for the whole shebang. Hey, Mr. Onstein, here I am. I'll march my band out. I'll beat my drum. And if I'm found out, your turn at bat, sir. At least I didn't fake it, hat, sir. Guess I didn't make it. Get ready for me, love, 'cause I'm a comer. I simply gotta march my heart to drummer. Nobody, no, nobody is gonna rain on my
Well, if your mental image is a tugboat in the middle of New York Harbor, then you've come to the right place. Hello, this is Larry Maslon, your host for Broadway to Main Street here on 88.3 FM, Peconic Public Broadcasting. Today, emanating not too far away from New York Harbor here in our New York studios. And that, of course, was Barbara Streisand's film rendition of From Funny Girl. And my guest today is, what would I say, the ne plus ultra, the sine qua non of film musical writers and critics, Richard Barrios. Welcome, Richard. It's so great to have you in the studio today.
Thank you, Larry. It's really a pleasure to be here.
The occasion is this very handsome edition that all of you will want under the tree or to the slightly to the left of the menorah called Must See Musicals, written by Richard, 50 Show-Stopping Movies We Can't Forget. It's published by TCM and commissioned by TCM, that great station that loves all these old movies and movie musicals as much as we do, and I'm sure you'll want to dial up Amazon the minute this show is over and order it. So, Richard, you've written the definitive book about the early days of Hollywood musicals, Song in the Dark, and a number of other great books. How did this book come about, and what do you want it to say to fans out there?
Well, after I published Song in the Dark, a lot of people would come to me and say, okay, you've done the beginning. Don't you want to keep going? And I used to say, well, no, the rest of the musical canon has sort of been written about a lot. But finally, I did write a second book about musicals called Dangerous Rhythm, And then...
Why Movie Musicals Matter?
Yes, indeed.
Great subtitle.
Thank you. And
a great book.
And they do matter. And then finally, once again, I got approached this time by TCM and Running Press to consider working on a book with a different format this time, because it wants they wanted me to talk about what were considered the 50 either greatest or most definitive movie musicals. And of course, every individual is going to have his or her own list of 50. But we tried to be as central, I guess, as possible in a list of from the very beginning with the Broadway Melody to yesterday, La La Land,
right,
of the 50 most defining, I think, musicals.
Well, what I love about your format is, yes, you focus on these 50, but it's, what was it, 50 with a lot of asterisks. You do refer to a lot of other musicals that are complimentary to the show, or sorry, to the film you're talking about at the time. So if you feel like, oh, I didn't, you know, where's Scrooge? Where's High Society? You know, they're in there in their own way, which is great.
I got a lot of questions about Where's High Society, and I must have to confess, it's not one of my personal favorites, but I know it is special to a lot of people, as are a lot of other ones. So one of the things I'd love for the book to be able to do is to encourage its readers to come up with their own list.
Oh, that's great.
And then go out and share them with people.
Oh, that's great. Well, my feelings weren't too hurt, although I love that movie. Anyway, well, one of the things we're going to look at today are tracks from films. This is an all-film episode of Broadway to Main Street, so it's sort of Broadway to Sunset Boulevard, pardon the expression. And we'll look at movie musicals that were adapted from great or near great Broadway shows in one form or another. And I suppose in many ways the granddaddy is the 1936 Showboat, which I'm astonished how well the first three quarters of it still hold up today.
The first four-fifths.
Four-fifths, go that far. Okay. You know, a problem that eluded Oscar Hammerstein even on stage, how to wrap this one up. But one of the things I find remarkable is how much of the either original cast or people who had played it on stage prior to 1936 are in the film. Helen Morgan, of course, Paul Robeson, who eventually joined it, and Irene Dunne, who
did it on the road, basically.
Yeah.
Several different places. Hattie McDaniel even did it.
Oh.
Charles Wininger, of course, the definitive Cap'n Mandy. Sammy White and Queenie Smith, a lot of people.
Right.
And also, Hammerstein himself did the screenplay, and Doris Zinkhuizen, who had done the costumes on the stage, did them for the film. So there were a lot of people, and probably the one reason that this happened was because the movie was made by Universal, which, unlike MGM or Paramount, didn't have kind of a preset musical unit. So they had to get these outside people, so they went to the source, which was very astute of them.
And very brilliantly realized by James Whale, of all people, from Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein at that point, but terrific. Let's hear a great seismic moment in American musical theater history, captured almost as seismically, or nearly as seismically, in the 1936 film of Showboat.
Why do you love Steve? Oh, I don't know. He's such a bad actor on the stage, and he thinks he's so good. Maybe that's why I love him. You see, Nola, love is such a funny thing. There's no sense to it. That's why you've got to be so careful when it comes creeping up on you.
It's like the thing you always sing about when we take our walks.
Fish gotta swim, birds gotta fly. I gotta love one man till I die. Can't help loving that man of mine.
That's it.
Tell me he's lazy, tell me he's slow. Tell me I'm crazy, maybe I know. Can't help loving that man of mine.
How come you all know that song?
Why, do you know it, Queenie?
For sure I does. But I didn't ever hear anybody but colored folks sing that song. Sounds funny for Miss Julie to know it.
Julie sings it all the time.
Can you sing the whole thing?
Of course I can. What's so funny about that?
Oh, listen, sister, I love my Mr. Man, and I can't tell you why. There ain't no reason why I should love that man. must be something that the angels done planned. Fish gotta swim, birds gotta fly. I gotta love one man till I die. Can't help loving that man of mine. Tell me he's lazy, tell me he's slow. Tell me I'm crazy, maybe I know. Can't help loving that man of mine. When he goes away, that's a rainy day. But when he comes back, the day is fine, the sun will shine. He can come home as late as can be. Home without him ain't no home to me. Can't help loving that man of mine.
I'm here today with Richard Barrios, the Dean of Film Musical Criticism. Can I call you that?
I like being called Dean.
Dean! And our next film we're looking at today is from the 1940s, Best Foot Forward, a Broadway show that didn't do much for me ever. But tell us why you picked this selection, because it's quite extraordinary.
The time between Showboat and Best Foot Forward saw a number of Broadway adaptations, but they didn't have a great deal of fidelity to the original source. And for some reason, Best Foot Forward did. The high school was changed to a military academy because it was wartime, but they used a number of the people that had done it on the stage. And it also had a great deal of vitality, which a lot of the Broadway adaptations, like On Your Toes and some of the others, hadn't had really at all. And this one cut features two of the original cast members, June Allison and Nancy Walker, along with a really good Hollywood interpreter, Gloria DeHaven. And it just kind of defines 40s musicals with its sound and its energy.
Well put. Let's hear the three B's from the film of Best Foot Forward.
I don't want to hear Johann Sebastian Bach, and I don't want to listen to Ludwig Beethoven, and I don't give a hoot for old Johannes Brahms.
The bees, we want our bees.
The bees, we want our bees.
They're the barrel house, the boogie woogie, and the blues.
Yes, the barrel house, the boogie woogie, and the blues.
Choose to lose the blues.
All the blues will really get you. And the barrel house is bound to upset you. And the boogie woogie beat'll drive you straight to distraction. Even school professors get a solid reaction from the barrel house.
The boog 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 boogie and the blues. Yes, the barrel house. The boogie woogie and the blues.
When a Dixieland band gets up on the stand, you'll hear the trombone slide and start to ride. So make them play those dirty, dirty, hurdy-gurdy barrel house boogie and blues.
Da, da, da.
The barrel house boogie and blues.
Da, da, da.
The barrel house, the boogie woogie and the blues.
It's plain to see now, we can't agree now. When everyone likes a different tea now.
Boogie, boogie, all the blues.
But out the fury will be the jury. We'll have to show us we're from Missouri. We'll reach the verdict if you will let us choose.
The barrel house, the boogie, boogie, all the blues. I love the boogie cause it tickles my spine. I love the boogie cause it's fresh and it's fine. Just like a cigarette with modern design. That's why I love the boogie woogie.
Yes, yes.
It seems to knock the wind right out of my chest. It's so darn good it makes a fool of the rest. Just goes to show you that the boogie's the best. That's why I love the boogie woogie.
Yes, yes.
It's light as rain, as low as thunder, high as a cloud.
loud and sweet as a cake. It's got a kick like mountain liquor, and it's a slick and hard to take as Veronica Lake. It picks you up and then it knocks you right down. It makes you laugh and play and act like a clown. No other music has a right to the crown, cause there's nothing that'll raise your heat like the boogie woogie beat. You'll be the barrel house like the boogie woogie beat.
When I'm feeling blue, I get the blues in the morning, the blues at night. I even get the blues when I'm feeling right, 'cause it sounds so good and it feels so good, and it is so good, my best jazz music there is. I love the blues as well, but not when I'm feeling swell.
Send me down. The atmosphere is squalid, but the band is really solid. They play barrel house, barrel house. They really go to town. The beat is steady as a rock there. They play till 5 or 6 o'clock there. You'll be mighty glad you found them. It's sweet to be around them while they stock it. Beat it, kill it, bang it. The barrel house will make you drunk as a sauce on jazz.
It's the barrel house.
Wow, you can practically feel you're on the home front when you hear that number.
And we should also add that the sensational trumpet playing is Harry James, yeah, who was pretty much the world's best-known trumpeter right at that time.
Wow. Well, we're talking about film musicals, and I think what we just heard is a case where a film musical actually perhaps improves on the stage version. On the Town, coming at the end of the 1940s, kind of a mixed bag, would you say?
Well, if you're going to the film to see a version of the original Broadway show, you're going to be disappointed because a lot of the songs were tossed out. But I make a case in the book for it being possibly the first reimagined film version, where they took some of the basic material and kind of went off in their own direction with it, and in this case did a great deal of location shooting, which musicals had not had very much of in the previous 20 years. And also, with this particular cut, New York, New York, we have an example of something that was very much a part of filmmaking at the time, where lyrics had to be toned down or denatured, yeah, because in 1949, you could not sing on screen that New York was a hell of a town. You had to say instead that it was a wonderful town.
And I suppose that gave us the title to another Comden and Green musical only a few years later.
That was never filmed, oh, yes.
Okay, the spectacular opening, unforgettable in cinema land, of On the Town.
New York, New York,
New York, New York,
New York, New York,
it's a wonderful town.
Hey, fellas, what's the big rush?
We only got 24 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, we never been here before.
Ah, what can happen to you in one day? What do you think you're going to do? New York, New York, a wonderful town. The Bronx is up and the battery's down. The people ride in a hole in the ground. New York, New York, it's a wonderful town.
Places to visit are so many, so the guidebooks say. I told my grandpa I wouldn't miss on any. And we got just one day, gotta see the whole town right from Yonkers on down to the bay. In just one day,
New York, New York, a wonderful town. The Bronx is up and the battery's down. The people ride in a hole in the ground. New York, New York, it's a wonderful town.
The most fabulous sight is New York in the light of the day, our only day.
New York, New York, a wonderful town. The Bronx is up and the battery's down. The people ride in a hole in the ground. New York, New York, it's a wonderful town.
Manhattan women are all in silk and satin, so the fellas say. There's just one thing necessary in Manhattan when you got just one day. Gotta pick up a date, maybe seven or eight on your way in just one day.
New York, New York, a wonderful town. The Bronx is up and the battery's down. The people ride in all in the ground. New York, New York, it's a wonderful town.
Well, we're here in the wonderful town of New York with Richard Barrios, the author of the great new A holiday present-worthy book, Must-See Musicals by TCM. And I guess we're getting to the point now where the big narrative musicals of the Rodgers and Hammerstein era are being adapted to the screen in these huge roadshow versions, lots of money, lots of anticipation when they come out, and lots of change-ups from the original cast who would be utterly unknown in Hollywood. And we get to Oklahoma,
which is the first film where Rodgers and Hammerstein actually took it upon themselves to produce the film because they had felt that some of the previous versions of their shows had been inadequate and Hollywoodized. And so here they wanted to be as true to the source material as possible. And they had the say over the casting, the director, and everything. And Oklahoma at the time was the most expensive film musical yet made.
Wow.
Partly because of the rigors of location shooting.
Which weren't even in Oklahoma.
No, Oklahoma had been too modernized by then, so they did most of it in Arizona.
Hilarious. Now, Gloria Graham, you insisted, and I think quite rightly, that we include this. Tell me about your enthusiasm for her performance on film as Ado Annie.
Well, Gloria Graham at that point had already won an Academy Award. She was a really outstanding film actor, very, very kind of quirky and idiosyncratic. And her Ado Annie on screen is unlike any that had come before her on the stage, and it's quite irresistible. And the one kind of thing about this performance was that Gloria Graham could not sing at all. Nevertheless, someone in their infinite wisdom decreed that she would be able to sing in this movie if they recorded her getting through, however she got through, I Can't Say No, over and over and over and over again, and taking little tiny bits of tape, which is what they used at the time, and cutting them together to make a coherent performance. and they were able to do it seamlessly. And it's a delightful performance, unlike any other I think I've ever heard. And especially when you see her do it on the screen, it just knocks you out. It's terrific. For my money, and this is not to minimize the contributions of the film's leads, Gordon McRae and Shirley Jones, Gloria Graham and opposite her, Gene Nelson, really kind of steal the film.
Wow. Well, here is a tribute to Gloria Graham and the editor's art in Hollywood, I Can't Say No, from the film of Oklahoma.
It ain't so much a question of not knowing what to do. I knowed what's right and wrong since I've been 10. I heard a lot of stories, and I reckon they are true, about how girls are put upon by men. I know I mustn't fall into the pit, but when I'm with a feller, I forget. I'm just a girl who can't say no. I'm in a terrible fix. I always say, come on, let's go, just when I ought to say nix. When a person tries to kiss a girl, I know she ought to give his face a smack. But as soon as someone kisses me, I somehow sort of want to kiss him back. I'm just a fool. When lights are low, I can't be prissy and quaint. I ain't the type that can faint. How can I be what I ain't? I can't say no. What you gonna do when a fella gets flirty and starts to talk pretty? What you gonna do? Supposing that he says that your lips are like cherries or roses or berries, what you gonna do? Supposing that he says that you're sweeter than cream and he's gotta have cream or die. What you gonna do when he talks that way? Spit in his eye? I'm just a girl who can't say no. Kissing's my favorite food. With or without the mistletoe, I'm in a holiday mood. Other girls are coy and hard to catch, but other girls ain't having any fun. Every time I lose a wrestling match, I have a funny feeling that I won. Though I can feel the undertow, I never make a complaint till it's too late for restraint. Then when I want to, I can't say no.
Now, Richard, sometimes we decry the use of quote-unquote Hollywood or pop singing stars replacing our beloved Broadway actors once the movie gets made in Hollywood. But in some cases, it's not a bad idea at all. And it seems to me Doris Day is a prime example of someone who upped the game when she started making movie musicals.
The thing about Doris Day, and I feel very strongly about it and about her, was that she was so good and so talented, but she was at a time and a studio where lots of good musicals weren't the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And she was so much better than most of what she was given. And only a few times did she get the real opportunities she deserved. And one of them happened to be in a film adaptation of a Broadway show where she just soars. And another is in what I think may be the first movie musical that then became a stage musical. And that contains reportedly her favorite role, which is the title role of Calamity Jane.
Well, in your book, you write quite a fabulous chapter on Annie Get Your Gun, which we're not listening to today, which had lots of, problems along the way. It's a great chapter, but I'm just astonished at how derivative Calamity Jane is of Annie Get Your Gun. So we're going to hear a number with Howard Keel, of all people, which is like, you know, something Irving Berlin would have left in the drawer.
And this is the most single derivative number in that whole score, because if this isn't Anything You Can Do, I Can Do Better, under another title and with different, slightly different notes, I don't know what is.
Calamity Jane and then Doris Day in the Pajama Game.
In the summer, you're the winter. In the finger, you're the splinter. In the banquet, you're the stew. Say, I could do without you.
In the garden, you're the gopher. In the Levi's, you're the loafer. Like an overturned canoe. Well, I can do without you.
You can go to Philadelphia, take a hack to Hackensack. Hey, I'll never ring a bell for ya or yell for ya to come back.
In the question, you're the why. In the ointment, you're the fly.
Though I know some things are indispensable, like a buck or two. If there's one thing I can do without, I can do without you.
In the barrel, you're a pickle. In the gold mine, you're a nickel. You're the tack inside my shoe. Yep, I can do without you.
In my bosom, you're a dagger. You're a mangy carpet bagger. In the theater, you're the boo. I can do without you.
You got charms, they ain't bewitching me. You've a face no one would paint.
I've got the darnest itch of me to be wherever you ain't.
In the bullfrog, you're the crow.
In the forest, poison oak.
Though I know some things are necessary, my half-pint buckaroo. If there's one thing I can do without, I can do without.
You're not him.
You're a fake.
You're a bonehead.
Troublemaker. I can do without you.
Love? Are you nuts?
Some people can't tell when it hits them.
All you gotta do is say hello to a man, and they've got you whispering in his ear. All you gotta do, it seems, is work for him, and they've got you going berserk for him. If there's a guy you merely have a beer with, they've got you setting the wedding date. It seems they've just gotta have some dirt to bend your ear with. So before you start, I herewith state, I'm not at all in love, not at all in love, not I, not a bit, not a mite. Though I'll admit he's quite a hunk of guy, but he's not my cup of tea, not my cup of tea, not he, not an ounce, not a pinch, he's just an inch too sure of himself for me.
Well, of course you've noticed his manly physique and that look in his eyes. Say, I'm sure he can cut most any man down to size. He must be as fierce as a tiger when he's mad.
And I'll bet he cries like a little boy when he's sad.
But I'm not at all in love, not at all in love, not I, not straw, not a hair. I don't care if he's as strong as a lion or if he has the rest of you sighing. You may be sold, but this girl ain't buying. I'm not at all in love.
She's not at all in love, not at all in love, oh no.
Not a pin, not a crumb.
Must be the summer heat that gives her that glow, 'cause she's not at all in love, not at all in love. She cries. light must be the light from the ceiling shining there in her eyes. He's young and handsome and smart, and we can't get over it.
But this lady's heart he doesn't affect a bit.
It's easy to see that her daffy grin is the grin she always wears. And she's breathless because she ran up a flight of stairs.
Obviously.
Naturally.
Definitely.
Obviously.
Naturally.
Definitely.
She's not at all in love, not at all in love, like she.
No, I'm not.
Not a dot.
Not a touch.
No, not much.
When I fall in love, there'll be no doubt about it, 'cause you will know from the way that I shout it.
You're shouting.
Doris Day in what is for me a tremendously underrated film musical of The Pajama Game, very true to its sources.
And with most of the Broadway cast.
Yeah, and choreography, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here with Richard Barrios today on Broadway to Main Street. Our show today is must-see musicals, I guess must-hear musicals, but we're going to call it must-see musicals after this terrific book that Richard wrote, Must-See Musicals, 50 Show-Stopping Movies You Won't Forget, published by TCM. So that's a good Christmas, a good holiday present for everyone.
Many holidays.
Many holidays. Any holiday you want, it fits. Let's like Holiday Inn. You could do Thanksgiving and on and on and on. Dubbing in musicals is an issue. I think as time has gone on, we're a lot more aware of who covered some of these stars.
Well, they tried at the time to keep it a secret, and they tried to say that Rita Hayworth used to sing for herself, which she didn't, and that sort of thing. And in the 1950s, with the rise of LPs, sometimes you would see these names on the album jackets of these unknown people, Trudy Irwin, mm-hmm. and India Adams and people like that, who were the unknown behind-the-scenes voices for stars whose voices were not considered strong enough. And the thing was, someone like Rita Hayworth actually could sing adequately. And in a day like today, her voice would have been enhanced enough to be able to cut it on screen. But back then, they didn't think anything about just wholesale, you know, put a voice in for anybody who wasn't known as a singer. And we were talking earlier about Rodgers and Hammerstein, and it's very good that they decided that Gloria Graham could do her own singing in the way she did. Because when they produced their next musical film, South Pacific, there were more dubbers in that movie than you could shake a stick at.
Right. Here is, for many people, one of the high watermarks of the Freed Unit at MGM, who give us so many great musicals, an original musical this time by great stagehands Lerner and Lowe, Gigi. And here's a song I believe was cut from the stage version of My Fair Lady.
Yes.
And repurposed for Gigi. And we're going to hear who first?
Betty Wand, who dubbed several people in movies. And originally, it had been thought that Leslie Caron would sing her own songs. And then it was decided, no, let Betty Wand do it. So we're going to hear the Betty Wand recording, which is what we hear now in the film. And then after that, we're going to hear the Leslie Caron original recording of the song.
Fantastic.
Say a prayer for me tonight. I'll need every prayer that you can spare to get me by. Say a prayer, and while you're praying, keep on saying, she's much too young to die. Your Waterloo whispers my heart. Pray I'll be Wellington, not Bonaparte. Oh, this evening. Bow your head and please stay on your knees tonight.
Say a prayer for me tonight. I need every prayer that you can spare to get me by. Say a prayer, and while you're praying, keep on saying, she's much too young to die. Unto your Waterloo whispers my heart, pray I'll be Wellington, not Bonaparte. Oh, say a prayer for me this evening. Bow your head and please stay on your knees tonight.
Gosh, heartbreaking, Leslie Caron, but she didn't make it into the film.
She's one of a number of women, especially from that time, who originally did the recordings for their songs and were told that their voices were going to be heard in the film, and then kind of had the rug pulled out from under them. And Natalie Wood, a few years later, was heartbroken that she did not get to sing for herself in West Side Story. And Rosalind Russell, of course, recorded the tracks for Gypsy and Audrey Hepburn for My Fair Lady, and we never got to hear them.
But Natalie Wood makes it into Gypsy, correct?
Natalie Wood did get to sing in Gypsy,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, interesting. Well, we get to the mid-60s, and the biggest blockbuster musical of all time is, of course, The Sound of Music. But even that's not, it seems The Sound of Music, one way you could look at it is it really compiles all these tropes that have been going on for 20, 30 years. A big Broadway show, alterations made for the movie, new songs added.
New casting,
dubbing, going on, location shooting, all of which comes up in this kind of effervescent stew that everyone loves so much. But we have some, in the song we're going to hear, it's an original by Richard Rodgers, now writing the lyrics.
As well as the music. And Julie Andrews doing her own singing and Christopher Plummer not doing his own singing. He's dubbed in this by Bill Lee, who had already worked for Richard Rodgers because he had dubbed John Carr in South Pacific.
Yeah.
And Plummer did originally sing for himself in Edelweiss, although later Lee stepped in and dubbed it. But for this song, it was thought that Plummer's untrained voice would not meld well with Julie Andrews, so Bill Lee had always done this song for him.
Well, it's still, I think, one of the best things Richard Rodgers ever wrote, certainly as a lyricist.
Somewhere in my youth
standing there loving me. Whether or not you should.
So somewhere in my youth or childhood, I must have done nothing ever could. So somewhere in my youth
or childhood,
I must have done something.
Maybe this time I'll be lucky. Maybe this time he'll stay. Maybe this time, for the first time, love won't hurry away. Everybody loves a winner, so nobody loved me. Lady peaceful, lady happy, that's what I long to be. Well, nobody loved me. Lady peaceful, lady happy, that's what I long to be. Well, all the odds are they're in my favor. Something's bound to begin. It's gotta happen.
Great performance, a great interpolation, a great show, and a great film, Cabaret.
Maybe this time, as everyone who loves Cabaret knows, wasn't originally in the show, and it actually predated the show because Candor and Ebb had written it originally for Liza Minnelli, and she sang it in her very first solo album. in, I believe, 1964, when she was 18.
Yep. We'll turn to another Candor and Ebb film adaptation. They seem to be very lucky in this regard. And this is Chicago, which is brought back movie musical, certainly in the 21st century. And also a new kind of added fillip, where there are original songs written that you don't see on screen, but they're kind of shoehorned and tucked in there so that people can get nominated for Academy Awards. Why don't you talk a little about Chicago?
Well, Chicago lost a few of its songs on the way to the screen, including Class, which was filmed and then not used. But the producers decided they did want to give Candor and Ebb a chance to maybe win an Oscar if they could. And so they decided that at the very end of the movie, after the final shot, but over the final credits, that the two ladies who we had just seen on screen performing would come back and do a song, which is very much in the mode of the other songs in Chicago. And they intended it sort of as a sequel to Chicago, so you kind of get the idea of what Velma and Roxy would have gone on to. And whereas they move on, and, you know, shotgun blasts aren't going to deter them or any murder or anything like that.
Terrific. Let's hear from Chicago. Well, we've been spending time with Richard Barrios, whose latest book belongs to everybody who likes this kind of music, Must See Musicals. It's a TCM book published by Running Press, and it's 50 show-stopping musicals we can't forget. And one musical I'll never forget, to me it's the greatest of the MGM movies. I know other people like Singin' in the Rain or Gigi quite a lot. And it's fascinating to me. It also has perhaps one of its most memorable songs written by Schwartz and Dietz to complement their songs in the movie. So that's an ongoing idea as well. Can you talk a little about The Bandwagon?
Well, The Bandwagon, as we see it on the screen, has little or nothing to do with the original Broadway show, The Bandwagon, from 20-odd years earlier. But it does use some of its songs as well as other songs from the Schwartz and Dietz catalog. And Arthur Freed, who produced it, asked them if they would write a song that could be sort of an anthem. And boy, did they hit it out of the park.
Yeah.
And so for this recording, we do get another example of dubbing, because while Fred Astaire and Nanette Fabre and Jack Buchanan are singing with their own voices, Oscar Levant required a little bit of help.
I didn't know that.
And Sid Charisse is dubbed by India Adams.
Wow. And the bandwagon ranks for you in the pantheon?
Absolutely. Michael Feinstein, who does the foreword for the book, considers it his favorite. I don't rank it quite that high, but it's one of those movies that I feel every time you see it, it gets better. And there are some just fantastic things in it that really kind of define the joy and richness that a really good musical can give.
And Richard, I want to thank you. And I assume you'll agree with me that anything that happens in life can happen in a film.
And vice versa.
Everything that happens in life can happen in a show. You can make them laugh, you can make them cry. Anything, anything can go. The clown with his pants falling down, or the dance that's a dream of romance, or the scene where the villain is mean. That's entertainment.
The lights on the lady in tights,
or the bride with the guy on the side,
or the ball where she gives him her all. That's entertainment.
The plot can be hot, simply teeming with sex.
A gay divorcee who is after her ex.
It could be Oedipus Rex,
where a chap kills his father and causes a lot of bother.
The clerk who is thrown out of work
by the boss who is thrown for a loss.
By the skirt who is doing him dirt.
The world is a stage, the stage is a world of entertainment.
Show that is really a show sends you out with a kind of a glow, and you say as you go on your way, that's entertainment. A song that is winging along, or a dance with a touch of romance, is the art that appeals to the heart. That's entertainment. Admit we're a hit and we'll go on from there. We play the charade that was lighter than air. A good old-fashioned affair. As we sing this finale, we hope it was up your alley. No death like you get in Macbeth. No ordeal like the end of Camille. This goodbye brings a tear to the eye. The world is a stage, the stage is a world of entertainment. Oh, 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 oh.
Well, where is the time all gone to? This is Larry Maslon here at Broadway to Main Street. Let's catch up next Sunday at 3.
There's so much more embracing still to be done, but time is running.